So let's head to the States. From the Ringer, he's ours, Brian Curtis. Brian, welcome back to 1116 SEN.
Proud to be yours, Jared. How you doing?
Very well. How have the reviews been of that rather extraordinary match?
To the extent that anybody has caught their breath, which I don't think includes me, it's been amazing. You know, I think it's a couple of ways. One is just the fact that both teams scored 50 points. I think the Chiefs became the first team to score 50 points in an NFL game and lose, which is really incredible. The previous record was 216-0, team scoring 50 points and winning. First time ever. But, you know, just the setting in the old L.A. Coliseum, Monday night football in the Resonance, that has being at night, two really good young quarterbacks that seem like they're the foundation of the future of the sport here. It's just fabulous. It was an amazing game.
It's split off in a lot of different directions, reading in the aftermath. One is the offensive revolution in the NFL, and then that's been extrapolated into conversations back here around scoring and the value of scoring. What has the offensive revolution looked like in the NFL?
Well, it's really interesting because it's something that had already been going on in college football here for a really long time, right? And the NFL had kind of resisted playing these wide open offenses where you throw the ball down the field more. You use, you know, what are called spread offensive concepts, mainly because the NFL just does what the NFL does, and it's kind of stuck in its own tradition. So I think what was so interesting about that is, you know, you have this coach of the Rams, Sean McVay, who's 32 years old. Doesn't that make us feel old? out there sort of throwing the ball all over the place. And, you know, and then I think the other big thing is the NFL's had this weird problem the last couple of years where all of their best quarterbacks, and you saw one of these guys when you were down here for the Super Bowl last year, are all like over 38 years old, right? Mm. So now you have two guys, Jared Goff and Patrick Mahomes of the Chiefs, who are really young. And, you know, we can watch a game like that and say, oh, these guys will be throwing the ball around for the next 15 years. And I think that's another exciting element of it, too.
Do people generally like the scoring explosion, Brian?
I think so. I saw a few tweets from what we might call purists right after the game who said, this isn't real football, and this is, you know, this is like a video game. This is like Madden or something like that. But, you know, I don't think you're going to get anybody – it's really going to hard to raise an army that says, you know, what we really need is a good 3-0 game. I think, you know, it's kind of that week after week, but I think 54-51 is going to be pretty popular.
The two quarterbacks that you've referred to there, so Jared Goff as a starting point, pick one. Is he the reminder that the great quarterback can transform your team?
He's, I think, a reminder of a slightly different thing. I think that's actually Patrick Mahomes is that guy for the Chiefs, because that's a team that's been, you know, kind of a grinded out, big offensive lineman, run the ball team historically. He comes in, he sat on the bench last year as number one pick, and he has suddenly just changed the trajectory of that team. The Chiefs were never a glamour team. They were never a team about throwing the ball down the field. So I think he's that guy. If I had to pick something for Jared Goff, I'd say it's the value of coaching, because he sat, you know, he was a number one overall pick in the draft. He started under this old coach, Jeff Fisher, and he was terrible, and everybody was using the B word, bust,
right,
about him constantly. And all of a sudden, he gets this new coach in Sean McVay, who, as I said, is 32. And he comes in, and now Jared Goff's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
And Patrick Mahomes was pick 10 the following in the 2017 draft. He's the records that were being put up during Monday night that he is in contention for or holding, and then six touchdowns on the night. His first season is astounding.
Astounding. And you sort of keep waiting for the magic to end. And, you know, I've all year I say I'm just waiting for Patrick Mahomes to have just one bad game so that we can all be reminded that he's mortal, and he really hasn't. And then, you know, on the biggest stage out there, he did throw two interceptions to end the game. But on the biggest stage, you know, with everybody watching and everybody sort of having circled that game on the calendar, he was just incredible. And, if you watch the game, the Chiefs kept falling behind, kept bringing him back until the very end. When the Rams scored the final TD. So I thought he was phenomenal.
Are we hoping, Brian, that come Super Bowl 53, those are the two teams?
Everybody's got that circled. I think what everybody's suspicious of is that somehow the Patriots are going to wind up in the Super Bowl again because somehow they make the Super Bowl every year. And they're the only team before this game, right, that had actually beaten the Chiefs this year. So I think anybody would take Chiefs versus Rams again or Chiefs versus Saints, the other giant offensive juggernaut that's been produced this year. But beware of the Patriots because they will continue to haunt us for the rest of our natural lives.
Drew Brees is, I mean, he has achieved a lot. Is he having a career year with the Saints?
He is. And again, he's part of that, what I said a second ago, that quarterback who's, you know, closer to 40 than he is to 20. In fact, way closer in his case. And he's, you know, I think finally been given the kind of offensive tools, Alvin Kamara, the running back, a better defense, things he really hasn't had in New Orleans since the 1 year that they won the Super Bowl more than a decade ago. And so, you know, when you look at that guy, you sort of think, here's a guy who is kind of destined to go like 9-7 every year and be so good that he would will a bad team into the playoffs. Now he's actually got good players around him, and they're a Super Bowl contender again.
The match on Thanksgiving Day weekend. This is almost obscene, Brian. $9 million. Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson. What sort of traction?
Almost obscene. You know, I would put it in the level of wrestling pay-per-view, lower level wrestling. You're a wrestling guy, aren't you?
I am.
Am I remembering that correctly?
Correct.
It's sort of like, yeah, it's kind of that, you know, that wrestling pay-per-view that you're not going to watch. You promise yourself you're not going to watch, and then you're sitting around the day after Thanksgiving, semi-comatose, or in my case, I'd probably actually comatose, and you think, yeah, well, why not? 1999, let's do it. I'd say that it's about that level right now.
So, we were talking about this this morning and yesterday. Who's the hero and who's the villain in this?
I think Phil is rightly cast as probably the very flaky hero, you know, who's dancing in commercials. And Phil has really leaned into the wrestling carnival attraction aspect of this. I think we're still getting Tiger to that place, right? That this whole thing relies on both of these guys just going all in on this and not pretending this is a dignified golf match, but pretending this is, but just saying this is a spectacle, right? We're all in. Tiger had a little quote the other day. He is definitely the heel, the bad guy in wrestling terms, but he had a quote the other day. Somebody said, you know, do you want to see if you can get inside Phil's head? And he said, well, I've been living in Phil's head for years and years. Now that's good, right? That's what we need. That's the kind of smack talk that is going to get this thing done.
I saw there were photos this morning of each of them buried in money. So it's not a subtle point that they're making.
No, and you know what I like about it is it's actually, to me, it's more like what golf actually is rather than the TV telecast version of golf we get with the bird song and all the other stuff on it. You know, whenever I go to a golf match, it's drunken guys and, you know, and all that stuff. I remember David Faraday, the golf commentator, once telling me, my base is 50-year-old white men who've had more than five beers. And, you know, and golf is also about gambling, right? And Tiger and Phil are going to be able to make all these side bets later in the match, especially if one of them closes out the match before the 18th hole.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, that's closer to what golf actually is rather than the golf we are sold in the media, the golf we would like it to be, this gentleman's sport. So I'm glad they're leaning into that a little bit too.
Is it a great rivalry, Brian?
It was a great rivalry. You know, both of those guys have dimmed in recent years. With the end of last year, we had Tiger, you know, kind of for the end of this year, excuse me, flash a little bit of a comeback and kind of give everybody, and one, we finally won a match, finally won a tournament. And you sort of like think, well, maybe Tiger could get back to being some version of the guy he once was. I think Phil feels like he's pretty much done.
Yep.
But you know, it is. They're both at that stage of their career where they're sort of more valuable as personalities, maybe than golfers. At least Phil is. And you know, really, that's kind of what pushes them into an attraction like this.
Is there any sort of feel about how the rest of the world's golfers are reacting to this?
I don't know that. I don't know that to be the case. I suspect golfers being as hyper-competitive and jealous and everything as they are all going to be watching this. Now, whether they make it through the commentary group, which includes both Charles Barkley and Samuel L. Jackson, I don't know. But they're going to be watching this thing, because I honestly think there's a window here. There used to be this thing called Monday Night Golf in the United States where Tiger would play David Duval once a year or something like that. And those were cool because it was really kind of mano a mano. It was like a little mini, you know, Ryder Cup kind of thing. So I bet you those other famous golfers are going to be watching this thinking, when do I get my pay-per-view? And when do I get my $9 million purse or $4 million purse?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I want my version of this thing.
And will it matter who wins? So my view around wrestling, Brian, is it doesn't really matter who wins as long as everybody hits their moves and provides those highlights as the climax is, oh, well, he won and we'll see you next time.
Yes, I think you're right here, and I think we can probably measure the value of this in like actual Twitter terms. You know, what will the meme of Phil sort of giving the side eye to Tiger after he drains an 18-foot putt be, or what sort of, you know, wonderful / horrible thing will the microphones, because these guys are going to be mic'd, what will that pick up accidentally, then talking to each other? That to me is really the value of this, yes.
Brian, great to catch up. I'm sure it'll be your guilty pleasure, as it will be for many. We've got a lot of people asking, can we see it in Australia? It's an unanswered question for the time being as to whether we'll be able to catch it. I think we'll need to find illegal feeds, but these things are as possible. Good to chat.
You too, Jared. Take care.